The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Welcome back to The Bill Myers Show, 106.3 KMET, 99.3 KCMD.
And by the way, The Bill Myers Show never really leaves you because podcasts are available for the last 3 months of shows on BillMyersShow.com and KMED.com. We thank our friends at Clouser Drilling for sponsoring the podcast. And of course, if you're looking for someone to help you find more water, because everybody needs more water, well, you know where to go, clouserdrilling.com. Now, when it comes to truth has been in short supply in the United States this year. I don't know, maybe this is just the human condition, maybe the last 4 years, maybe the last decade or two. I don't know. So we need to find some truth. How about True the Vote? Can the vote be trusted here? True the Vote. And Catherine Engelbrecht joins me. She's the founder of True the Vote, truethevote.org. It's a Houston, Texas-based nonprofit organization devoted to preventing voter fraud. And boy, I'll tell you, her business is good. Catherine, welcome back to the show. Good morning.
Hey, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Boy, talk about a never-ending bucket of work to do, you know, over there in the situation, because ever since we've ended up doing this huge, massive push to mail-in voting with no real, chain of custody thing, you know, right. no real chain of custody, things have just gotten hinkier and hinkier all the time. And, of course, you're fighting back on this, and I really appreciate this. What I wanted to talk about today, though, is your 611 project, because a big question, some people have been wondering, are all these millions of illegal aliens that the Biden administration has let into the country these last few years, are they going to have some impact on the election? And what say you?
I say yes, and I wish I didn't have to, and I wish it wasn't true. But I can only lay out the fact pattern, buttressed by what you just described in your opening comments, is the last 4 years of utter insanity, where we have just seen, you know, what things that we would have never imagined happening in our country, happening just, you know, in broad sight. So with that as sort of a backdrop, I believe that this cycle's primary issue, whereas last cycle's 2020 was, you know, the fog of COVID and the way that changed everything. And as you rightly say, you know, many of those processes that were put in place ostensibly as emergency standards during the pandemic were later codified and are now part of the normal ongoing process. And that, of course, includes the mass mail out of ballots and many other things. But what we see with the non-citizen issue is that you look at it, as I say, the fact pattern, you look at the fact that that the way that non-citizens, and we've all heard about this, are being shuttled into the country is with a package of sort of a welcome wagon of goodies.
Oh, yeah, everything from cell phones to gift cards with loads of cash on it.
Exactly.
You know, those kind of things, right?
Exactly. And so what a lot of people don't know is that all of those programs are connected at the federal level to social services. And all of those social service applications for HUD housing, for health care, for food stamps, all of those applications carry baked into them voter registration.
Wait a minute. I want to understand here. So the millions of illegal immigrants that have come here, the millions of illegal aliens coming here are given those cards and given the phones and given the social services. But you're saying that that voting is built into the cake, and how could that even be? How so?
Where? Well, it's built in. This was passed in law in 1993 as part of the National Voter Registration Act, where the goal was to increase voter registration and voter participation. It wasn't back in the early 90s considered that we would find ourselves where we are now. Or frankly, maybe it was, Bill. Maybe this was always the inch-by-inch plan. But it started in 1993 in the National Voter Registration Act, which required that all social service programs have as part of their application voter registration. Then what happened during the Obama administration, two big things fundamentally shifted. One was that non-citizens were given access to many social service programs. And the second is related to the registration piece. It used to be that when you filled out these applications, or when an NGO, as is the case now, when an NGO is filling them out on behalf of the migrant, it used to be an opt-in. So you would go through the application, and then if you choose to opt in to register to vote, you would make that determination. Now it is an opt-out. You have to take extra hoops or go through extra hoops to avoid being registered. So you can already begin to see how the water gets murkier. Then you add a few other ingredients here. The first is we all are now aware of the executive order that was passed in 2021 by Joe Biden that made it very, very clear that his primary goal, this is one of the very first things he did in his presidency, was to execute this executive order that demanded all federal agencies to actively engage in voter registration, which seemed out of place, didn't make a whole lot of sense at that time. Clearly, you see now, looking back, what that was setting in motion was agencies that had really never, let's just say, flexed their muscles in the way of voter registration. Yes, it was on the books that they should offer it, but it was never a mandate. Suddenly, they had, as of 2021, a federal requirement from the president to now make this a main issue, and they have done just that. Couple that with the way that registrations are actually taken in, and what happens in the case of federal social service programs is that data is sent straight to the state for both the social service program that the state will be required to support, that have been typically it's a federal-state partnership type program. They'll send that data in. It splits out. Part of it goes to the program in question, but the voter registration information gets dropped into the voter rolls, and it's up to the state then to verify eligibility, citizenship status.
Now, do most states actually truly verify citizenship status if this voter registration information is being brought in from every federal program that's signing up illegal aliens everywhere you go?
Great question, and the answer is no. Not only are they not, they can't. They don't have access to the data necessary to validate citizenship. They are given access to one very sort of thin slice at it called the SAVE database, and it's a very narrow path. You have to check one record at a time. There's no sort of real-time, you know, at scale ability to confirm citizenship. So it's very inefficient. Most states attempt it here and there, but by no means is it a standard practice. And even where states do have it as what they perceive to, or what they sort of define as a practice, when you dig more deeply, what you recognize is that they are only looking at applications coming in typically from the Department of Motor Vehicles and nowhere else. So right. If you get signed up for HUD or food stamps or healthcare, they're not looking at the data coming in there. So it's a very buggy problem, and there is no way to separate it.
And this sounds I can't help but think that it's intentionally loosey goosey, Catherine.
Well, that's right, and I would say that the last shoe left to drop here, and you know, we did some looking at the reason that we call this project the 611 project is because there's actually lines in our criminal code that begin to introduce this idea that citizenship is a state of mind. It was realizing that initially sent True the Vote down this path to really wrap our arms around what might be happening, because I think the last piece of this, and I pray that I am wrong, but I believe that we could see an executive order coming from Biden, you know, in the fall that gives amnesty and citizenship to the migrants that have come across. There's precedent for this. It's happened in the past.
Yeah.
He could certainly do it. And while it would absolutely be pushed back against by attorneys general in various states, the level of engineered chaos that would inject is, again, very reminiscent of what happened in 2020. Because now you have no ability to separate who is a citizen, who isn't a citizen, what does the executive order mean? Everybody's coming to the polls. You've got 20 states that do same-day registration. People can just show up and vote. How do you stop them? The lawsuits will be crazy. There will not be a clear path. And you know, my heart does not want to believe that a president of our country would do that. But when I look at everything else that has happened, we can't deny that it is a possibility. And for that reason, we must be prepared.
Catherine Engelbrecht, once again, with True the Vote, truethevote.org. We're talking about this question about non-citizens voting in our elections here in the United States of America, and how executive orders and various changes in rules seem to have made it not necessarily just possible, but very likely probable. And how do you even research something like that to find out here, Catherine, whether or not an illegal alien ended up actually voting in our election? Is there a way to kind of drill into it?
Oh, sure. I mean, the data is available. The challenge is it's not available to anybody that, you know, wants the answers. if you don't want to know the answers, just don't let the questions be asked. And that's the environment that we're working in. There's no doubt databases being tracked of migrants coming in, being processed, being shuttled across the country. That exists, but it's not being shared back in the appropriate ways to prevent this mix-up between citizen and non-citizen status on the voter rolls. And what set us into this effort of trying to understand each piece of this process was hearing the left-wing, you know, pundits just repeat again and again and again, well, non-citizen voting is illegal and they won't do it because that's perjury and it's illegal. And so I thought, well, okay, how illegal is it? What are we really doing? Because I understood the
okay. How many people have actually been prosecuted and convicted for lying about the fact that they weren't a citizen, you know, on their voting?
Yeah. and not many. I mean, there's not a single database to go and click in and say how many times has this happened. It's not readily available unless you are, you know, tracking each state and every possible level of prosecution.
But at this point, though, Catherine, I would say that goes down to your line of thinking that people don't want to know, so they're not asking
the
question.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so what we should do is make the process transparent, have our states post what it is that they do to verify citizenship. It doesn't require the disclosure of any personal information. Just show us what your process is. Let citizens be confident that this is being taken care of. I would love to see it, because we've looked very diligently to try to find the path, and there doesn't appear to be one. It appears that we are setting ourselves up for a nightmare situation.
Now, I had talked with you last time we had you on the show. By the way, Catherine Engelbrecht, once again, which is with True the Vote, truethevote.org. The situation that was brought to our attention here an election a year ago, in which we had legal aliens, they were non-citizens, but they were here legally, coming to the area to learn how to drive truck. And they stayed in motels, and they had to sign up for driver's licenses and in order to train for truck driving at the local community college. And because of that, ballots were sent to these people, because they were automatically then registered to vote in Motor Voter. And I know there's something on the application in which, you know, you check and say whether you're an American citizen or not. I think there is something, but I don't believe anybody really checks up on that. They just more or less take it by faith that you're telling the truth. Is this all that uncommon? I mean, I'm just talking about Oregon, but what do you
think? It's not uncommon at all. And it forces us to reconcile the fact that these are simple and avoidable, preventable mistakes. The reason that it is being allowed is that it is intentional. This is being intentionally done. Elections are not meant to be perpetually broken with perpetually bad data and broken process. This is intentional. We can do better. We're choosing not to. Private industry can resolve identity, residency, and citizenship in real time with available data all day, every day. So could our states. What is lacking is the political will to do it, and we are running out of time if we hope to save ourselves this November.
Catherine, you have a call to action on what people can do about non-citizen voting. And could you touch on some of those highlights? I'll certainly post it
Absolutely.
On my blog and link to all this, but this is on truthevote.org.
Absolutely. You can go to our website, click on Engage at the top of the page, and down will drop a whole host of things that we're working on. And if you're interested in the 611 project, you'll see it right there. The call to action includes a 50-page book, I think it is we're up to now, that is everything you ever wanted to know about non-citizen voting and what we're afraid to ask. Well, that's all put into one place for you if you're interested. But the call to action is this. Number one, call your Secretary of State or contact your Secretary of State and ask them to publish their process for verification of citizenship. If they have one, great. Then there's nothing to worry about. But if they don't, then we've got to be serious about fixing the problem now. Secondly, call your elected in Congress, state and federal, and make them two things there. Number one, make them aware that states aren't being given access to the data that they need. And that is written, and it's written up in our handbook that's there for you. But it's also, you know, well documented. States don't have access. They should be given immediate access to these databases so that they can verify citizenship.
So this way, when the Biden administration takes aliens and puts them all around the country, that the states would then know that they are non-citizens so that they would automatically not let them vote, right?
We should at least have a fighting chance. Now, of course, that none of that, though, stands against the possibility that these migrants are given citizenship status via executive order. I every time I say it, I cringe. I hope it's not true, but it is done. It has been done before.
Well, yeah, I remember Reagan did it in the late 80s, right? And of course, they did the same thing. We're going to legalize everyone who's here, and then we're going to crack down and enforce the law since that time. And of course, that didn't happen then either.
That's right. That's right. And then President Obama did this with the Dreamers Act and DACA. He passed that via executive or issued it via executive order. And it was challenged in court, and the court upheld it and said that the president does have the authority to do this. So there is precedent for doing exactly what I'm suggesting could happen.
Now, you have also, in that call to action, help review and report ineligible voter records with IV3.us. What is that? Could you explain that briefly?
Absolutely. That is a web app that citizens can use to look at their local voter rolls, and we use the term pre-sift. We pre-segment the rolls to the problem, to the ones that we feel like have indicators of problems and ineligibilities, and we make those determinations based on looking at other commercial available databases. And so volunteers are given a record at a time. They can choose to challenge. Every state has a different process, but for your state, we list a spreadsheet that has every single state's process, and we work together to follow it all the way through. We've already had hundreds of thousands of records submitted for review. People are getting great responses. Mm. Not always, but it's yeah, again, it's another thing that citizens can do. We have to be all hands on deck and not just sit, you know, in the stands and wait for someone else to take care of it. Government will not solve this problem. If we want an honest election, we're going to have to work for it.
Well, government is never going to lead the people. Really, it's always the people leading the government. That's the way it works.
Right.
You know, politics
right.
downstream
That's
of right. Of culture. Now, the number four one about leaving no polling place unmanned doesn't work here in Oregon because, as you know, it's all mail. It's all mail in. But still, you can certainly be an election observer with your local party. Okay. Now, the number five one about spreading the word. You know, scan, check, protect. Now, that one's an interesting one. We talked with you about that last time, scanning, protecting, and checking your vote to make sure that you are not on multiple voter databases around the country where you may have lived before, right? Isn't that what that was about?
That's exactly right. Scan, check, protect, and this is also on our website, is a simple 1-2-3-step process. Number one, if you're not registered, you can get registered. Number two, check your registration and make sure it's active and correct. But the third piece, the protect piece, is the one that always surprises people. If you've ever moved to a different state from where you were originally registered, most people believe that as you move, your voter registration just sort of resolves and stays current, and wherever you've moved from, those records fall off. But more often than not, that's not the case. And so what we've done is set up a program that encourages people to check out any state you may have previously lived in, check their site. We help you do it. See if you're still registered. And if you are, we give you the instructions that are very simple to follow on how you can be removed from the voter roll. So it's a great way to clean up the rolls just one person at a time, making sure that, you know, your own backyard's clean.
Yeah, and that was really easy to do. That was really easy to do, too, I have to tell you, because I did that for myself. Last time, I've been in this general same vicinity for 30 years, but for a couple of years, I was in Fargo, North Dakota, and also Moorhead, Minnesota, you know, in both states, and I was registered to vote in both of them. And I went and checked back at that point, and fortunately, I was clean. I was not on those rolls any longer, but you made it really easy to check, and I appreciate that.
Well, absolutely. It's the little stuff, and it's the stuff that we can, you know, it reminds us all the role that we all have to play, the responsibility that we all have in this process, because it's not just enough to vote. We need to vote and stay engaged. If we do, then the things that I'm talking about, as you know, perilous as it may seem, these can be set right very quickly in very short order, but we have to stick together and do the work to make it happen.
I really appreciate your work. Catherine Engelbrecht, once again, True the Vote. She's the founder of True the Vote. It's a Texas-based nonprofit devoting to preventing voter fraud. And you would think that this would not be controversial, you know, to actually prevent that, except that voter fraud certainly helps benefit certain places. And would it be fair to say, though, that depending on whether you're in a red or blue state, is it just the majority party that's happy with the status quo the way it works? You know, if you're a majority red state, maybe you don't want to look too hard because, you know, it's been working for you, and maybe the same with a blue state. Do you kind of work that way?
Yeah. Yeah, it really feels that way, that it's just, you know, once people are elected, they may rattle their sabers about the problems of election fraud, and then once they're in power, it's often just not a thing anymore, because they've, you know,
hey, I'm in.
They're where they,
right?
That's right. Work for them. But it doesn't solve the very real fundamental problems we have with a broken process. And this is something that can be addressed, should have been addressed a long time ago, must be addressed soon before the whole system cracks in half. But we're getting there. I mean, I think one of the few good things to come out of 2020 was that America woke up, and I think they're more aware than ever, still coming up a learning curve to because it's a head scratcher. How could we possibly be where we are? We have the lowest voter participation of any country in the industrialized world. We're the only country in the industrialized world that doesn't have a standard form of voter ID. We are one of the few that uses mail ballots at all. The UN doesn't even recognize elections that are conducted primarily by mail, and that's the direction that many groups are pushing for.
Yeah, it might be one of the few things that I ever agreed with the United Nations on, that they don't recognize, you know, the quality. Yeah, because, you know, because they would rightly say, hey, you know, the dictatorship is going to make sure that they stuff the mailboxes with his ballots or her ballots, right? You know, that kind of thing. It's just, it's human nature. We know how that works.
That's right.
All right. Catherine, thank you so much for your work. And there's a lot of, like I said, calls to action on ways that you can help improve this situation. It took us a while to get here, but we had to work hard to push back as much as possible on this. TrueTheVote.org. I'll link to all your information. Thank you so much, and we'll have you back. Be well.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye. 7:33 at KMED, KCMD. And one of the reasons why this is so important, then, when you think about it, is that you know, I'm sure that those that want to just load the system want to demoralize, you know, people like us from voting. And we can't let that happen, because I'm sure they'd like you to think that, well, it won't make any difference. Well, look at what even Holly Morton and I were talking about a few minutes ago, in which known Democrats in Josephine County have re-registered to be Republicans in order to affect a local primary race. All right. And now that is perfectly legal, but and we can grouse about that all you want. But where we have to respond to this, since what they're doing is legal, and like I said, Republicans have done the same thing to Democratic primaries in the past, things like that have happened, is that we have to turn out. We have to turn out our voters, the good people, and overwhelm the people who would wish to do us harm. and enable these intrusions. This is the Bill Myers Show.
We're asking people how they'll vote for state senate.
Diane Linthicum. She's endorsed by Oregon Firearms Federation.
Diane Linthicum. She's endorsed by Oregon Right to Life.
We need Diane Linthicum in the state senate.
She's honest when she's fiscally responsible.
Diane Linthicum.
Diane Linthicum. She's pro-life.
I'm voting for Diane Linthicum because she supports parental rights.
I'm voting for Diane Linthicum.
Diane Linthicum.
I'm voting for Diane Linthicum.
The choice is clear. Diane Linthicum for state senate.
Paid by Linthicum for Oregon.
It's time to treat your home and your feet to new carpet. The Home Depot has an offer for you. For a limited time, you can get 10% off select home decorators collection carpet, and installation by licensed providers is included. Offer valid May 9th through May 26th, 2024. Receive 10% off select home decorators collection special order carpet and installation. Installation included with qualifying purchase. Exclusions apply. For licenses, see homedepot.com/license numbers.
Freddy's Diner in Old Town Eagle Point is a family diner designed to please everyone in the family. Along with 13 burgers, there's 8 fresh sandwiches and 7 different melts, all served with fresh-cut fries. There's Carolina chicken smothered in mushrooms, onions, bacon, cheddar cheese, and honey mustard sauce. There's 7 seafood baskets, hickory smoked ribeyes, chicken fried chicken and steak, and so much more. You're invited to Freddy's Diner on Main in Old Town Eagle Point. Open 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. every day for lunch and dinner.
Do you have an electrical checklist that needs to be completed? Call Completed Electric Plus. Need an exterior all-weather plug-in installed? Completed. A motion sensor light in your entry, pantry, or laundry room? Completed. Too many appliances tripping your breaker? Completed. RV outlet on the side of the house? Completed. Electrical jobs get completed quickly, expertly, and affordably with licensed techs from Completed Electric Plus, specializing in residential electrical jobs. Call Completed Electric Plus and check those jobs off your list. Visit CompletedElectricPlus.com.
Severe storms like the one in Willamette Valley this winter should make property owners take stock in tree safety. Hi, this is Jeff with Quality Tree Service. Dead or weak limbs or unstable, old trees can cause property damage and worse. If you have trees that you think may pose a problem, please have them evaluated. At Quality Tree Service, we love trees, but some may need maintenance or removal. Call me today, your ISA certified arborist, and I will provide an honest assessment of potential hazards. Visit QualityTreeServiceMedford.com.
106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD. This is the Bill Myers Show.
Sure glad you're waking up with me here. It's Monday the 13th. 62 degrees, going to be a beautiful day, beautiful week, really. Getting up to the upper 80s, 90s by the end of the week, but just kind of perfect, really, when it comes right down to it. Yeah, a little bit warmer than normal, but hey, it'll happen, and then we'll be back. It'll be probably raining and snowing next week. You got to wonder sometimes, right? Hey, let's do some emails of the day. Emails of the day sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson at Central Point Family Dentistry. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. It's on Freeman Way in the Freeman Plaza, right next door to the Mazatlan Mexican Restaurant in Central Point. And they really make crowns easy there because it's none of this kind of situation where you go in there and then you have to wait 2-3 weeks for an out-of-town lab to do it. They have an in-house lab for most of their crowns. And like half hour, you know, they scan your mouth and they go, boop, 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 stick it into the little lab machinery and it starts working up and it pops out in like a half hour. Man, it's like while you wait. Find out more, CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com. And let me go to Dave Plus. Dave Plus says, hey, Bill, I know someone who is, this is going back to the voter situation, True the Vote, with Catherine Engelbrecht. Bill, I know someone who is a British subject and has been issued a green card. Every time this person gets their driver's license renewed, they ask if this person would like to register to vote. This person's response is always, no, I'm not a citizen, to which the person at the DMV says, oh, that's all right. Apparently, this is policy at the Oregon DMV. I would imagine, Dave, this is probably the rules put in by our Secretary of State, which is why the Secretary of State vote is so important this year, right? Definitely need a change there. Jim weighs in here saying, good morning, Bill. Listening to your show, the lady speaking is giving some false information. Okay, let's see what Jim says. I was an active Army recruiter in 1995. Bill Clinton had mandated, not a choice, all recruiting offices of all branches were required to register people to vote. We had to mark a box on a 201 card that they were already registered or got registered while in our office. If you registered someone, you filled out a log. They filled their card out and we mailed it. We were inspected monthly on this. All recruiting offices were a point of voter registration. It was the same at the employment office as well. It was really going on back in 1995. It just didn't happen. Biden made this so-called rule more expansive. And that, I think, was the point here, Jim. The president, of course, directly in charge of the military via commander-in-chief status and getting their people on the joint chief, et cetera, et cetera. And ruling that, Biden's recent executive order ordered every single federal agency now to join that party that you duly noted, all right? Jim, I appreciate that. All right, and Jerry writes in, hey, Bill, why do we borrow a currency that we print ourselves? That was a question directed at Biden's economic advisor, and he had a surprising response. See that link before? Yeah, I heard the story there, Jerry. I believe you and Andy Gauss of U.S. Coins discussed this subject a few years back. Simply put, our government doesn't have to borrow Federal Reserve notes from the Fed. We can eliminate the Fed and have U.S. currency that is issued by the federal government. Jerry, there are big money powers, though, that they would not be amused at your claim at doing something like that, because the Fed must be. And, of course, the Fed, what? Essentially a federally recognized consortium of banks. Conspiracy or not? Captain Bill joins me. No conspiracy. More weirdness going on in the Iron Gate. We're going to talk Wild Horse and more after news, okay?
A Southern Oregon tradition like no other.
The City of Central Point Wild Rogue Pro Rodeo, presented by Rogue Regency Inn and Suites.
On Thursday, May 16th, kids get in free.
Head to your local Bi-Mart and get Thursday night general admission tickets for just $25 and free kids tickets, all a part of Free Kids Night.
Many of the nation's top 20 cowboys, cowgirls, and national finals rodeo stock are coming to the home of the only 100-point bull ride for this national finals qualifying event.
All new Ranch Day on Friday and Saturday, perfect for the whole family.
Kid-friendly dummy roping, pony rides, and more from 4 to 8 p.m.
So ride on down to the Expo in Central Point, May 16th, 17th, and 18th for the best Wild Rogue Pro Rodeo to date.
Starting at just $25. Get your tickets online at theexpo.com.
The Wild Rogue Pro Rodeo is sponsored by Bi-Mart, Lifer Excavation, Better Built Construction, KTVL 10, and Q100.3.
Josephine County Republican Party is proud to endorse Dr. Noah Robinson for the Oregon Senate. A principled man, Robinson is chosen and supported by citizens rather than lobbyists. Dr. Noah Robinson is also endorsed by Oregon Firearm Federation, Oregon Right to Life, and many honorable senators, including Dennis Linthicum, Art Robinson, and Brian Boquist. Republicans win when they don't compromise their principles. In this critical time in Oregon history, vote for the candidate who will make a firm stand for our conservative Oregon values. Vote Dr. Noah Robinson, the citizen's choice for honest leadership, who puts truth before personal gain. Unlike his opponent who has taken hundreds of thousands of dollars from big pharma and lobbyists, Noah's campaign is funded by the people. Josephine County Republican Party reminds you to vote Dr. Noah Robinson for Senate. A leader to reform Oregon. Paid for by the Josephine County Republican Central Committee, ID 319.
News is sponsored by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground by visiting MillettConstruction.com.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. Former President Trump coming off a strong rally in New Jersey over the weekend, in which he spoke to one of the largest crowds any candidate has seen in recent years. He also criticized the media for not showing the right perspective to show just how large that crowd was. He also says he's been the victim of a Biden show trial in New York. Workers at the first Apple store to unionize have now also authorized the first strike against the tech giant's retail operations. A statement from the union representing workers at a store in Towson, Maryland, say they voted late Saturday to authorize a strike. No date was set. The sharp interest rate hikes of the past 2 years will likely take longer than previously expected to bring down inflation. Several Federal Reserve officials said in recent comments that there could be few, if any, rate cuts this year as a result. This is SRN News.
This hour of the Bill Meyer Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros on Main Street in Phoenix.
Hi, Jason with Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros with more spring savings. Right now, purchase a set of four qualifying Yokohama tires through June 15th and get up to a $100 rebate. Get an additional $50 when you purchase with your Tire Pros credit card. There's 14 different tires to choose from, including Geolander AT for your truck or SUV and the Avid Ascend LX for your passenger car. So stop by or call for details to save right now on quality Yokohama tires exclusively at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros.
If you're remodeling your house, start with the foundation. Millett Construction offers a no-pressure, thorough inspection of your home's foundation and a no-obligation estimate if your house needs work. The foundation is most important because all the repairs and upgrades you're planning, from the floors, windows, doors, cabinets, even the roof, can be affected if your foundation is unstable. Be sure you're on solid ground. Millett Construction will level your house and correct the shifting soil problem. Visit MillettConstruction.com.
Have your taxes gotten off track? Just call Zach, CPA at First Response Resolution. Visit FirstResponseIRS.com today to see what Zach can do for you. First Response Resolution in Eagle Point is your first response to the IRS, defending your rights as a taxpayer.
Hi, I'm Paul Strandberg with Valley View Nursery, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
Captain William E. Simpson, naturalist, friend of the program. Overall guy, loves his wild horses, also likes to keep an eye on what's been going on at the Iron Gate and the various other dam removals, and it's great to have you back on, Captain Bill. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Bill.
Hey, before we get into your latest here, is there anything new to report on the excrement show, which continues to just deliver over in the Klamath on the so-called restoration of the fish and everything else, and we do this by destroying the river. I guess that's the kind of the way of things. Anything new to report on that?
No, it's pretty much the same, status quo. They're trying to make the best of it as far as, showing whatever they can show, cherry picking data and, trying to make it look as successful as possible. I mean, it's human nature, I suppose. They don't want to come out of this thing looking like a failure, obviously. So they're taking pictures of selective groups of plants that they've planted and make it look like it. They've got some really good things going on with the plantings, and there is some stuff growing, I will say that. But the reseeding program is not the huge boom that they hoped it would be. There's a lot of barren areas, primarily on the main stem Klamath,
and we would
expect that because the sediment is different than in the outer bays where the tributaries come in. Like in Camp Creek, at Scotch Creek, the bay there, the sediment is different because it's coming out of the canyon, not coming down the main stem Klamath. And then similarly, at some other side bays like Jenny Creek, you get a different component of the sediment, which is more, I think, is suitable for replanting. But then on the main stem, when you come up and look, you can see the main stem Klamath, the mud flats, it's not so good there.
Yeah, mostly just clay, like you were talking about before.
Yeah.
Last time we had talked is that you had talked about the construction company that pulled out of the destruction of the Iron Gate. There was concern about not being able to do borehole or drilling on it because there was concern if they were to take apart the dam, they would just kind of release all that clay and liquid under pressure within that. Has anything come of that, or is that just over now?
Well, what they're doing now, there was concerns in FERC, their head engineer, the regional engineer, wrote to KRC talking about the fact that, what are you going to do if the diversion tunnel fails? What are you going to do if this happens? There were some things that it's kind of late in the game to be asking, what are you going to do? I mean, supposedly when you go into these kind of projects, you sort of have gamed it all out, right? And you kind of already know what you're going to do. You don't wait till the last minute to say, well, what are you going to do? So there was obviously some concerns about some potential problems that would arise that apparently were not sorted out completely in the original planning process. So, but the way what's happening right now is they're attempting what they call a top-down removal. So they've got people and equipment on the top of the dam, and they're removing layer after layer from the top of the dam coming down. And I guess they have approval. The last I heard, they have approval to take it down 38 feet. Now, I don't know how they came up with that number. Maybe that's where, once they get past that 38 feet, they get into the heavy clay core. Which
would be under severe pressure, which you had talked about, could explode out, essentially, burst.
Yeah, well,
right?
That's what, not me, but that's what engineer Stephen Koshy said. Mm-hmm. In his paper. He talks about the pore pressure of the, you know, the clay core and the issues there. And then, of course, being clay, if you've got a piece of heavy equipment right on top of it and it does have some component of water in it, how mushy is that, right? So is equipment going to disappear down into that clay core, or what's going to happen? You know, I mean, there's a lot of and I'm not a dam engineer, and I'm certainly not the specialty is the earthen dam engineers like Stephen Koshy. So I don't know. You know, they've got 38 feet they can take down. It'll be interesting to see what happens next. But, you know, my concern right now is the remaining sediment and on the dam. And, you know, the plants that are growing out of that are, of course, bioaccumulating the various bioaccumulative toxins that are known to be in the sediment.
And then animals will be eating them, right?
Right. And then, of course, when you eat toxins over time, if they're bioaccumulative, which they are, according to C.D.M. Smith, everything that's in that sediment is bioaccumulative.
Heavy metals, boron, things like that, all sorts of other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Lead, cadmium, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, yeah. Well, it's just something, keep an eye on it. And, you know, obviously this is above our pay grade, so to speak, here, and we're just being conditioned to accept the lie being, you know, promulgated from the various states that had this predetermined outcome that somehow destroying this infrastructure is going to restore the fish, even though you look at the Elway Dam and they're still saying, oh, it's all right, just wait a few more years, it'll come back. It'll come back, right? You know, we're always told one way or the other. Hey, I don't want to give short shrift to your latest article, though, on Siskiyou.news, where you've been doing a lot of good work over there. And this having to do with your first love, which is Wild Horse Fire Brigade, and taking care of the wild horses. You have several wild horses on your ranch over in the area, Northern California. And you have an article out there called The Eco-Terrorist Shell Game, The Wildlife News. What is this all about, huh? Eco-terrorist? It sounds pretty strong.
Well, yeah, you've got these folks that, you know, they're, in my opinion, are disguised as preservationists or environmentalists. And, you know, being an environmentalist wasn't a bad thing, you know, not so long ago. I mean, it was about, hey, let's kind of take care of what we got and try to make it last, right? So, but now the term is like morphed into, I don't know, brand new ground, if you will. And we've got people that are, I think, in my opinion, are disguised as conservationists or preservationists. And basically what they're doing is they're trying to, in my opinion, just shoot everything down to get, you know, make life so hard in the wilderness and in the rural areas that nobody can live out here anymore. You know, and part and parcel with that is what happened with the dam. You take away people's water, what happens? Well, their property isn't worth anything. And then the government swoops in and buys it for $100, $200 an acre, because property without water is, that's about what it's worth down here. and then you've got this wildlife news organization. It's not really even an organization. They came out with this article talking about, you know, how the horses are feral and this and that. The other thing, you know, well,
well, see, feral, you know, calling the wild horses feral, there's kind of a, that's kind of implying that they were domesticated, that just kind of got cut loose to be wild, and that they weren't anything to be concerned about?
Know, okay, so that term gets thrown around a lot, and it's confused quite a bit. I mean, a true feral animal was quite recently domestic, that was released, and you know, goes out in like a feral cat or something like that. But when you have animals on the landscape for hundreds and thousands of years, those aren't feral. There are some horses that have been released out here, certainly. The cavalry released horses, you know, back in the 1800s after they were done, you know.
After the war was over, they released the animals, yeah. Right? Let the animals go.
Yeah.
Okay.
And of course, we all know that the horses were reintroduced to North America. There's arguments that there were splinter populations that were remaining. I mean, we did have Sir Francis Drake see our herd right here on the Oregon-California border in 1580. That's only 80 years after Columbus. So, you know, were they a splinter population? You got to ask that question, because in 80 years, how do you get hundreds of horses from the East Coast, where Columbus first stepped foot, all the way to hell and gone out here? You know, how's that happen? So there's a lot of interesting science and things that are coming out. But the point is you've got a guy that's condemning horses who is also condemning everything else. I mean, he condemns livestock production. He wants to introduce wolves all over the West, according to his own bio. He's claimed to have been at thousands of locations. When you read this guy's bio, he says he's visited, and I'm quoting from here, right from his bio, hundreds of mountain ranges around the West, more than 400 wild wilderness areas, more than 200 national parks, and every national forest west of the Mississippi. Well, okay, so when you listen to that, that would take your entire life just to do that, just to be a vagabond and travel around and see all those spots. And then who pays for all that? I mean, that's a lot of travel. I mean, if we're lucky, we go on vacation once every 3 or 4 years. I don't know about you, Bill, but yeah. I haven't been on vacation in 10 years.
It's been a while. But I guess then you're criticizing Mr. Werthner. You're taking to task then his opinion on what's going on with the wild horses here. And where do you and he differ, let's say?
Well, he doesn't think they should be on the landscape, and he doesn't think anything else should be on the landscape, frankly, except wolves. He was the president of the National Wolf Growers Association.
Okay, boy, you know,
how do you like that one?
You know, is it just me, or it strikes me? And by the way, I'm talking with Captain Bill Simpson with me this morning. I can't help but notice that we seem to have a whole group of individuals that, like I say, don't want anything here except either predators or professional arsonists on the landscape. You know what I'm getting at here when it comes to forest policy? You ever get that impression? And, oh, by the way, we don't want any dams either, no infrastructure, so we blow that up. And then, oh, where do the fish go? It's really weird.
He got his knickers in a twist, this Mr. Werthner, when Vermont Law, who works with Wild Horse Fire Brigade, my organization, we were criticizing the Kaskaskia National Monument, the range management plan, and the past management of the monument. So in 2000, when Clinton signed that thing in, everybody says, oh, it's so wonderful, it's so pristine. But nobody asked, well, why is it so wonderful and pristine? Well, I was up there in the 60s logging, fishing, hunting. My brother-in-law is a Klamath Indian. You know, we did all this stuff up there. We knew the land, and there was horses back then in the 60s, a lot of them, hundreds, and the land was pristine, okay? Now, fast forward from the 60s, you know, 40 years later to the 2000, all of a sudden, it's so wonderful and so pristine, we need to protect it. Okay, great, protect it.
And protecting it means removing what had already been there before, the horses, right?
What kept it, what was managing it. Let's take the Japanese gardeners out of the garden. Okay, and let's see what happens. You know, these people, they come in from the city with these big ideas, and they never ask the key question: what's going on here? Why is it so wonderful? You know, they just come in and then want to enforce their will on the landscape. And then so Werthner got all bent out of shape on his phony blog. The Wildlife News, it makes it look like he's being published by a third party. But when you dig down behind the layer after layer, there's two layers there. That Wildlife News is owned by this other thing, Stage Step. And then when you get behind that, he's the president of that. So really, he's just publishing himself. It's just a blog that looks really official, right? Wildlife News, that sounds official.
It has the right news, right? You know, well, it must be Wildlife News because it says so on the masthead. There we go.
Right, right. And so he's basically, it's his own rant sheet. And, but anyway, he went after Vermont Law for criticizing the mismanagement of the monument. You know, they talk about in the original 2000, the year 2000 range management plan, they were going to do fuel reduction. They were going to go in there and manage the forest. They were going to remove all the legacy livestock production. There's miles of barbed wire in the ground up there. I mean, it kills the deer, the yeah. horses. Everything gets wrapped up in that shit. Even Dave Larson, when I took him up there. And I've taken the monument people up there that managed it, who's never been to the areas I took them. You know, they manage it, but they've never seen it, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, so I wrote an article about this saying, look, you know, criticizing the monument for not doing what they said they were going to do is fair game. That's right. That's spot on. But Werthner doesn't like anybody who goes against any of the gangrene people. He's just like Dominic Della Sala. He just as soon let it all burn to the ground and then call it a natural event.
Yeah, well, that's why I wanted to at least bring people's attention to your latest here. And it's over on Siskiyou.news, the eco-terrorist shell game. And the wildlife news is what you term that. Interesting corollary or response to, you know, attacks going on with you. I always appreciate the talk here, Bill. Thanks for staying in this game here. And whether you're a supporter of the wild horses or not, it's good to know what is going on out there on the land for real, okay?
Well, yeah, and it's more important than ever without the water. We, you know, without our lakes, Bill, we're in deep, deep trouble. Mm-hmm. And I've never seen this much grass. This year is a record breaker. I've got grass up here on the mountain like I've never seen before, and it's going to dry out, and we don't have the lakes to fund the water supply we're going to need.
Yeah, those are one hour fuels on those hills, aren't they?
Yeah, and that burns super hot, super fast, and I'm really afraid for the town of Ashland, because like Dave Larson said, if that fire gets into that matchbox of a forest, you can just forget it. It'll just burn all the way down to Ashland, and that will be a disaster. It'll make the as bad as Paradise was. If Ashland burns, it'll be a huge disaster. So I'm really worried about that, Bill.
Yeah, let us pray that we don't have to have that teachable moment, okay, Bill? But thanks for writing on it. We'll have you back, and you be well over at Wild Horse Fire Brigade, okay? All right?
Thank you.
Thank you now. It's a couple minutes after 8 o'clock. KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford is where you are. KCMD Grants Pass. Translator K294 AS Ashland.